source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Metaphysical, paranormal, you know, all those things you've been wondering about. Are you ready to go deeper into the realms of the unknown? I hope you've got your walking shoes on, because life is an adventure, and this is the journey. Come on, let's go.
Hello and welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Jen Cruz, your host tonight, and this is the Journey Radio Show. Hey, we're showing up as the She Squatchers tonight. So, of course, I've got my fellow She Squatcher on the line with me. Hey, Jenna, are you there?
I am here, and I'm so excited about talking to our guest tonight. Hey, everybody.
Hey. Oh, you know, we're going to be talking about Bigfoot, but tonight we're talking about Bigfoot in Massachusetts, and I don't think we've talked about that before on the show, so that's going to be exciting new information for us. I wonder if there's anything different way out there in Massachusetts. As most of our listeners know, we are hailing from Minnesota and North Dakota, so Massachusetts is quite a distance from where we are, and I think there's sometimes differences between the Bigfoot in various locations, so it's going to be interesting talking to our guest tonight. His name is Dave McCullough. He is a BFRO member, and he's currently with the Bigfoot group called Squatchachusetts. I hope I said that right. I think Jenna could say it three times fast. Jenna?
Squatchachusetts, Squatchachusetts, Squatchachusetts.
Oh, my gosh, she's so talented.
All right, well, let's...
Well, let's not keep him waiting any further. So I'm going to welcome our guest onto the show tonight. Hey, Dave, are you there?
Hey, Jenna. Hey, Jen.
Hi. How
are you?
Hello.
We're doing great. Thank you for coming on the show tonight. We're really excited that you wanted to come on and talk to us about your adventures looking for Bigfoot.
Well, thank you for asking. I'm very, very humbled to be asked.
That's wonderful. So, of course, we want to get to know a little bit about your past. So, have you always believed in Bigfoot?
Yeah, mostly as a kid, reading some books, and the more I read about it, just always thought something was out there, and I always had an interest in all of the other subjects, you know, ghosts, UFOs, all that stuff, sea monsters, you name it, all the cryptozoology subjects.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So you believed in Bigfoot. When did you start looking for Bigfoot, like yourself? How did that happen?
2005, I went on a BFRO expedition in Whitehall, New York. It was my first time actually going out and getting involved. That was a weekend long at Whitehall, New York.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. And did anything exciting happen?
I actually saw an orb on that expedition. I didn't see nothing Bigfoot related, but we were in a lot of great areas where there was a lot of sightings, and there's been a lot of history up in Whitehall, New York. But no, nothing Bigfoot related happened, but I did happen to see my first experience of seeing an orange orb. It was pretty new to me, being new to this and coming out of the city and not really having experience in any of that stuff. So that was quite an eye opener.
So you saw an orange orb. Was it in a picture, or did you see it with your naked eye?
Oh no, I actually saw it like come right out of a bush, come right out of the weeds and shot up into the sky, me and another guy.
Wow. So did it look like a fireball?
It was like a ball, probably like a baseball size, and it was a split second, it come out of the bush, maybe stayed for a blink of an eye, and it just shot straight up in the sky and gone.
Straight up?
Yeah, very, very strange.
And how many years ago was this?
That was 2007.
Oh, okay. So
11 years ago.
Oh, wow. And was that...
I'm sorry?
Oh, I was just going to ask, was that an area near where you are right now, or is that somewhere where you actually had to travel quite a ways to get to?
Oh, yeah, that was in Whitehall, New York. That's probably up... I'm in Massachusetts, and that was probably halfway up. If you look at New York and Vermont border, probably in the middle of Vermont, it's in upper New York. Probably... It's in the beginning of the Adirondack Park. It's right at the lower end of it.
And do you know if there'd been anyone else saying that they've seen anything out there before, or is that just something that you had gotten lucky
actually,
with?
There's been a long history up that way. Actually, the whole Hudson Valley Belt has been a very busy and very well-reported UFO incidents over the years in Sasquatch. So it's believed there is some kind of energy or something down the Hudson Valley.
Oh, wow.
Very, very busy with Sasquatch and UFO activity.
That's very, very cool. Now, when you answered Jen's question, she had asked you, how long have you been into this? You had said for a very, very long time. Were you really into cryptids when you were like in your teens, or maybe did you kind of start looking at them into the 20s, and were your thoughts on them yes, no, maybe? What kind of things like that?
Actually, it started with the Loch Ness Monster and UFOs.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I had an uncle of mine told me a UFO incident where he saw it. And as a kid, I was really, really excited about that, someone to know. And then as I get older, I'm like, maybe he was just playing a prank on you. But as he got older, he just passed a few years ago. And I asked him about it, and he was absolutely serious, absolutely sure. He's seen actually on two different occasions he saw them. And then I kind of started watching the program In Search Of and anything with those subjects. And I remember in sixth grade, it's a funny story, they had a reading program where everyone in the class got to pick a book and they can order it. And the bookmobile would come next week and bring all the books. And when they were giving them out, they were reading people's names and what title they had. When they got to me, they're like, oh, the Loch Ness Monster, this ought to be interesting. And the teacher kind of almost like, the whole class laughed. That was probably like my welcome to talking about this stuff. You know, if you want to get laughed at, just bring up any of these subjects and you will get laughed at. So, more into Sasquatch in the movies, but not until like in the 90s and the explosion of the internet and the BFRO and other groups that actually had databases where you could read about this stuff. And then picking up a couple of books, learning a little more. And like I said, once getting out in 2005, once actually going out there and, you know, meeting people and talking to people that have seen stuff and getting involved with then just doing some cases for the BFRO and for other research groups where you're talking to witnesses and going to places where stuff has really happened, and just over time seeing all the credible people, and really it's been a great ride. It's been a lot of fun, and it's just interesting. I kind of wish I wish there was an answer, but then again, if there is an answer, then what, you know, find a new hobby and...
You know, I really do think that when we find one answer, it's only going to open up so many more questions. So I think we'll have plenty to think about. But you did. Absolutely. You mentioned the bookmobile, and I have to say, oh, I remember the bookmobile. Jen, do you remember the bookmobile?
That brings back memories. I was always like, I want a book. I want a book. But
oh, yeah.
It was because everybody wanted a book.
I remember the teacher saying to me, of all the books in this catalog you can pick, and you picked the Loch Ness Monster. It was the first one that jumped out to me, and that's the one I want. And I still have it.
Nice. I think the first one I picked out was Breakdancing, How to Breakdance, because it was really cool at that time, and I think it was in sixth grade. And, yeah, I looked at it once, tried to do the worm on a completely It was completely hard rock floor, and I hurt myself, and I put the book under some shelves and left it, and I was like, I'm never going to break dance again.
Oh, I'm going to say thank you for that. Jenna's not the coordinated dancer, but she's an excellent singer.
I can dance. Just give me some time. I can dance.
Oh, yeah. I'm the dancer. You're the singer. Just remember that.
I just can't break dance, gull darn it. Or all slow right. dance.
Moving on.
No, I'm sorry, Jen. You're right. I'm not a dancer.
Oh, I always have to give her a hard time, so please bear with me.
Well, it's just, you know, I'm not bad at a lot of things, so she likes to bring up the things that I'm bad at.
That's no. true. She's good at everything. Look at how she said Squatch's juice at three times. I can barely say it once.
Oh, funny.
Well, you're doing well with it.
Right?
Thank you. Awesome. So back to the bookmobile. Yes, that was a fun time for sure. But the Loch Ness Monster.
From that book, I did really get an idea about the early research groups that I envied them. A lot of different ones. They dedicated their time and money, and that's another thing that through all this, there's no. Everything is on you. Every dime's on you. Anyone that gets into this. There's no funding anywhere for that. Maybe could have found an answer sooner if a big backing person could fund this. There could be an answer.
Definitely, and that's the thing. You know, the community of people that are looking for the different creatures. We are putting money, our own money, in this. We're spending our own money, so it's not like we're making money doing this. People, I think some people think that we're making money, and we kind of giggle because we're like, no, we are.
Yeah.
I'm going broke trying to do this because I love it. You know what I mean? So, but
exactly.
We have had some people ask if we're doing this just for the money, and I said, what money? The money exactly. We're paying out?
And the ridicule.
Yeah.
With it.
Yeah.
If anything, like I said, if anything, you get bad press or negativity, a lot of naysayers. I've heard it all. You hear all along the way. You just keep going. You just keep plugging along and hopefully find something and just do what you do. And like most times we go out, you're lucky if you see anything.
And definitely.
I tell people that there are a lot of new people coming out with us now that we have had some experiences, but over the course of how many years? So it's not like some people that are new to it might think, oh, geez, every time you go out, you must have. That's not the case at all. In fact, most times you just go out, come home empty. Nothing to see, nothing. It's that one time, you know, in a year or so, a few things happen to you. It's just enough that keeps you in the game and keeps getting reeled in a little, I should say, you know?
Well, it's always exciting for us when we get a glimpse of, or experience something, rocks being thrown or we're finding something on the FLIR or whatever, weird lights in the woods. That we just can't get enough of that stuff. That's what keeps us going back for more. I'm sure it's the same with you. Right?
Yeah, I agree. We had one this year in September. We did have some good, probably within 100 yards, a tree got cracked and pushed right over, slammed into the ground. And probably in the last 4 years, I've had two really good vocalizations and two tree pushovers, which we call them. And wow. On that one, on the last one, I didn't hear it, but the two guys that were with me, heard some chatter, heard someone talking, and actually before we did the knock, you see, one of the guys was saying, there's someone over there talking. I don't know what they're saying, but it was, there's someone up on that hill, and a few minutes later, I did a knock, and right after the knock was a crack, and a tree slammed into the ground.
Oh, wow.
And we had thermals and everything, and there's nothing. That's what boggles the mind is, you know there's something there, they heard it, and then we did the knock, and then the tree crashed, and then we've got the thermals right up in that area, and there's not a signature anywhere. It's just drives you nuts, kind of.
Yeah. Well, did you get your thermals tested?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
or did you share them?
No, my friend has two of them. They both had the thermals, and I did the knock. I walked away from them, and we just listened for a while and then did the knock. But it was right after that. And, again, it wasn't far away. It was right there. And that's the second time, like I was saying earlier, I did have a really good tree knock 2 years ago in New Hampshire. And same thing. It was very close, loud and clear. I didn't have a therm, but my partner did, and he had it right in that area. And if anything, to get away that quick, it would have had to make quite a racket getting away, and it was silent. As soon as the tree hit, it was just silent. No signatures, no nothing. So pretty baffling.
So we've got Tim in the chat room, and he says that you are a wealth of knowledge. And he says, ask him about his TV show appearance and his Western Massachusetts squatching time.
Oh, thank you, Tim. Did he mention TV? I did happen to be on the group I was in, History Channel, in 2007 or 8, the Bigfoot New York episode. And I'm not sure if that's what he's talking about.
Okay. So what were you on that
Tim
for?
Vogel? Monster Quest. There was a show, Monster Quest. And
yeah, I remember that.
They were doing an episode for Whitehall, New York, and they asked our research group at the time. I was in the NESRA group, Northeast Sasquatch Researchers Association, and we were for the part of the show where they did scenes of people looking out in the woods. We were in that, and then the rest of the show was they talked to witnesses and had some witnesses on lie detector tests, and pretty good episode. It was a lot of fun doing it, too.
Wow, that's fun. So how long were they out there filming you guys?
They were with us for the three or four days. And they basically camped with us, stayed out with us, went out at night. Actually, a couple of them were a little leery, and they went into town and got a room, but the other two guys stayed out with us. And the other guys drove back and forth and stayed in a room. They were
a little nervous?
Yeah, they were. I think they kind of, the week leading up to that, they were in town talking to people, and most of them were eyewitnesses and people that have seen it. And I think they got a lot of vivid information from witnesses that they were like, they'd come up to them, as soon as they could talk, they were, do we really have to stay here? And, like, there was one sound guy, two camera guys, and a lighting guy. So, yeah, it was pretty intense for them, too. And we actually did have a little activity one night. And they were on edge, as nice. You know, as expected, as we were, as everyone is.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, yeah. It's cool that they got to experience that, because sometimes when you drag a bunch of people out there, nothing happens, right?
Yes, exactly. Like I said, most times out, 9 times out of 10, you'll be lucky if you see any wildlife, a deer or anything, because it's really quiet and just you got to be at the right place at the right time, I guess, and it's a lot of luck.
Mm-hmm. I think when you have too many people and too much equipment, it kind of scares everything off.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yep. We like to keep our group kind of small when we go out. So that seems to work well for us. So
yeah, we keep our group small. On some of our expeditions, we do have a good amount of people where we'll split up. Instead of all of us going to one spot, we will keep in contact and split up and check different areas. And if there's nothing going on in one, plus spreading out, if there is something and you get something going, they could run them right into another group. You never know. It's just more eyes and ears out there in different areas. But, yeah, I agree. In one spot, like too many people in one spot together, there's just, you know, too much commotion and too much noise. And we get We've been noticing the past couple of years when you get to a spot, sometimes when you everyone's getting out of the car is when you might hear a whack or a distant vocal, and as well as when you're turning in for the night. Seems to be with me. I've had the two really good vocalizations at late night when everyone's turning in, and it's after you've been doing stuff all night, and basically everyone's getting ready to crash and got their gear put away, and then you'll hear something. So it's either right when you get there or right after.
So, you know, I agree. You know, I feel like it usually happens right as you're getting out of the car. And that's why Jen always stresses when you get out of the car, make sure to have your equipment going. So, so I agree with you. Yeah, definitely. And definitely at night, I feel like we're just being tested, watched. They just want to make sure to pay attention to where we are, what we're doing, and that make sure that we're not a threat if they are out there.
Yeah, we've been doing that lately where, because a lot of times we'd just show up and, you know, be getting our stuff together, slamming the car doors, putting our gear, talking. Now we just more pull up quietly, close the doors very quietly, because we're starting to think that when we get there and arrive and get out, that there could be a warning sign for other, from one Sasquatch to other Sasquatches that, okay, we got some people here. And it always seems like it's right. You know, like I said, we're arriving and almost like an alert, like a siren or a, the last two times we've been, someone will go down, did you hear that? And we're really not even out of the car yet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, a couple times for me, the best vocalizations I've heard were, one was up in northern Vermont and one was in western Mass. And they were both in the same situation. After 2 o'clock in the morning, turning in, you know, everyone's, you've been out all day and out all night, and right when you get back and, or either sitting by the fire or something very laid back and the night's over pretty much. And, that seems like when you're going to be on your toes also. And that'd be a good time to keep a recorder out through the night as people are turning in and quieting down. That's when you might get some action.
That's true. That's true. I often wonder, are they aware that you just shut everything off and they're like, hey, good night, humans.
Yep.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Hey, I'm here. What are you tuning in for? I thought you wanted to come out, you know?
Right.
The last one I had was another member of ours, just two of us, and everyone's turning in, and we stayed up at our cabin just shooting the breeze outside. And it was just across the pond from where we were. And it was like, almost like a man yelling, like almost like, ah! And almost like a, like you just said, you were all in, we were playing music, singing, having a good time for a while, and then we're all turned in. And that's when, right when everyone's laying down, is the, almost like a ha ha. That's what we were calling it, joking around. Ha ha, I'm right here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Reminds me of a television show we all know.
So when you're turning in, keep recording. That's a little tip for if we're starting to get on that.
Definitely.
That sounds good. Well, that brings to mind Ron Moorhead, how he had recorded the things after they had turned in. So that's good advice. Those were good recordings.
Those are probably the best I've ever heard as far as audio recordings.
Yeah.
Especially the interaction and the, you can tell it's different creatures. In one part, you can tell there's actually three of them. And a language. It's actually, now it's coming out where you can tell it's actually, it's not even just a grunt or a groan. This is like a communication, a language.
Yeah, I think I read about that. Stuff. That they were, the language expert had listened to that and said that they were identifying language points to it. So,
yeah,
that's very interesting. Very, very interesting. And of course, why would we assume that they don't talk, really? Wolves are communicating through their types of yips and howls.
why wouldn't Bigfoot be communicating in the way that they can as well? Right? That makes sense.
A lot of people have described, there were even some other recordings of that. They call it a chatter, samurai chatter, or gibberish, where they're actually going back and forth. And quite a few reports I've read where people describe, like, someone in the woods and with a, you know, Russian language or a Japanese language that totally can't understand it, but it's not your basic grunt or scream, you know.
Definitely talking and not just territorial.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So are you a tree knocker?
We do. We do a little bit of everything. Some hoops, howls. We have a good member. Actually, I think it's the guy that sent that question in. Tim, if he's out there, he does a great owl impression. Gets the wood stirred up. Gets the creatures, critters.
Mm. Well, shout out to Tim. Shout out, Tim.
Oh, what kind of owl does he do? Is it a barred owl?
It is, yeah.
Ooh, who cooks for you? That one.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, awesome.
Very knowledgeable guy. Very knowledgeable member to our team. He's very good at the outdoors. He's an outdoor guide. Very helpful.
Very awesome. Very awesome.
The Vogel brothers. I'll give them a plug. The Vogel brothers. His brother Eric's one of our members. Two very, very good outdoorsmen.
Nice. He's hey, Vogel brothers.
And Tim is in the chat room sending a wave.
Mm-hmm. Whitney says, whoop.
Yep. Wonderful. Wonderful. That's awesome. I've really enjoyed the Bigfoot community. Everybody has been so welcoming to us that it's just been shocking, really. It's been really shocking how open and open-armed and helpful people have been to help us get going and get started, and they want to hear about what we found and share what they have found, and you know, and I love that sharing. That's part of the reason why we bring people on the show. We're sharing, you know, getting to know other researchers and what they're doing, and learning from each other, really, you know.
That's
good stuff.
That's part of we're all helping each other, actually.
And that's how it should be.
It's definitely a positive for the community.
Mm-hmm.
People working together. Very,
absolutely.
Very good to see.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, our way of looking for Bigfoot is a little bit different than what most people are doing. But that's because, you know, we're not we don't have the stamina we used to have. We're not big burly guys that can walk into the woods for 3 weeks at a time. So that's not us anymore. So maybe back in the day.
It's all it takes, though. Is you don't have to go mountain climbing or bushwhacking. You just a nice flat trail. Because I think myself, they're going to take the path of least resistance themselves. And although they can, and really thick and wooded areas, they can seem to navigate very easily, even in the dark, where they can move around and not walk into stuff. So they must have excellent, excellent night vision.
Oh, I agree. They must. Because they seem to come out more in the evening time, you know?
Yep.
That's what they seem to come out when the sun starts to go down. But here we are. We're at the half of the show, so we're going to have to go to our two-minute break. So stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back with Dave McCullough from Squatchachusetts.
This is Aaron Gillow from Ghost Adventures, and you're listening to Parax Radio.
What happens to a ghost when their home is torn down? No one thinks of the disembodied when they rip down old buildings, dig up cemeteries, and build clean, unhauntable condos. Every year, hundreds of spirits are driven out of their own haunts by the careless living to exist alone with no one to scare. At Para-X Radio, our hosts feel the plight of these evicted disembodied, and we're reaching out to you to please open your heart to one of these lost souls, such as the ghost soldier of the General Wayne Inn or the abandoned spirit cat of Benjamin Rush. So please, please, let a little spooky into your life. Won't you open your house to a ghost without a home?
Para X. Sunday nights at midnight on the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. Come, get lost with us. In order for the light to shine so brightly, the darkness must be present. Tune in every Monday at 10 o'clock. The Dark Sun Rising on the Para-X Radio Network.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is the Journey Radio Show. When we are not live on the air like we are right now, you can find us at thejourneyradioshow.com. And hey, we're the She Squatchers. Check out our website at shesquatchers.com. And won't you please head over to our Facebook page and give us a like there. We share a lot more up-to-date information on our Facebook page. So to see what we're up to, go ahead and check that out. There was a little article that was, I think it was posted today by a new publication out there that interviewed us actually last winter. And they were the magazine wasn't even out yet, but they were preparing their articles in advance, and so it finally came out. That was kind of exciting. So there's a link to that on our Facebook page if you'd like to check it out. So tonight we've got Dave McCullough, and he is a BFRO member, Bigfoot researcher with Squatchatchusetts currently, and of course he's out of Massachusetts. So he's here to tell us a little bit about his adventures out there in the East Coast of Massachusetts. And he's already talked to us a little bit about New York, so that's pretty cool. And so let's get back to talking to Dave. Hey, Dave.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey. We're really excited you're here. And of course, we're Thank already you. In that last half of the show. It goes by so quickly. I just can't believe it. So, yeah. So, of course, we want to hear more of your exciting times in the woods and what other things you've experienced and what you have to share with us about your Bigfoot adventures out there. So have you found footprints that you've cast?
I haven't personally, no, but our group has up in the Berkshire Mountains in Western Mass.
Uh-huh.
And we did have one in the snow a few years ago at another member of ours' backyard, actually, John Wilk, who's our founder and for Squatchatchusetts. And he had some tracks in the snow. We did get some through the BFRO 2 years ago down on, actually it was on Southeast Mass towards Cape Cod area, which is the east side of the state. And those wow. are actually in the snow. But actually, other than that, no, I haven't personally made any casts.
So how are your Bigfoot up there? Are they more on the friendly side? Are they on the aggressive side? I mean, have you noticed?
Most reports I've taken or we've studied have been mostly they see the witness and take off. There's been nothing aggressive. We did get a good one this past summer for some fishermen down in South Central Mass. They were nighttime fishing. And they got a good look. Three or four guys all got a good look of it. And no, same thing. It kind of moves along like it can't be bothered. Just checking you out and or a fast exit, a quick takeoff. And other than that, we did get a good one a few years ago. One of our first reports for Squatchatchusetts of a couple very, very credible. Saw a white one. Central Mass in the middle of the state, and it's actually straight north of where these guys saw one that were fishing, but the one this woman saw was actually a white one, and she's kind of more described it as tall and lanky as opposed to most description. It's pretty stocky and robust. This was, you know, it could be an albino, it could be no explanation again, but it could be because of the age of it, old. It, again, these are all theories, but just why is one white? And, you know, that, if anything, that most of them have great camouflage, natural colors. This would stick out like a sore thumb. But most species of animals, you will find the odd albino, you know, white deer or white moose. They're very rare, but, they, you know, they do exist.
You know, I just love hearing stories about people finding the, in getting to see the white Bigfoot, because, like you said, it's so, it just doesn't happen very often. And I just love the stories. So if you can continue that story at all, I'd love to hear more about it.
Sure. These were two people that were out just out hiking, and they're both actually professors at Harvard University. So that's when I was saying they're credible. That's very credible, sane, clear-thinking people that were just out for a hike. And the woman kept looking over. The husband never did see it, but he knew she saw something by how startled she was. And as they were going up the trail, she kept telling them this, I swear there's something following us. And they'd stop, look around, nothing. And that's pretty typical in a lot of reports. People will stop and the noise will stop. And as they start walking, they'll hear it continue. And sure enough, she happened to stop and look, and this thing that was walking between two trees and jumped behind another tree because it kind of knew it was spotted. And saw it peek out a couple times, and by the time she called to her husband to look over, it was already running through the trees, and he could hear stuff and see kind of like the trees moving, but again, he said he never actually saw anything particular, but she was very, very sure of what she saw. And when we went back, she took us to the spot. I actually stood in where she saw it, and with another member, she said he's not even close, and I to the height, and I held up my hand as high as I can, and I'm a little under 6 feet, so my hand was up seven and a half feet, and she said his hand's like still not even close. So it was a tall, lanky, said it almost reminded her of a basketball player, where it wasn't the, because we were kind of, you know, telling her about common descriptions, how they're, you know, big, bulky, muscular. And she said, no, this was, it was just white, and it was just kind of tall and lanky, long arms, and very fast. She said when it did take off, she said it took off like a dart, and it was just gone. But the size-wise, she knew the exact tree it was at, and that's where I stood, and when I kept poking around. But then when I stood out, she goes, wow, he's not even close to the size. And so that was pretty interesting. I did another case for the BFRO down on the east side of the state. It's more low-lying and swampy. And as the state goes out to the west in Massachusetts towards New York, it grows in elevation till you get out to the Berkshire Mountains. So the east side is more going down towards sea level and very swampy and wet. And a lot of reports, a lot of history. It's called the Bridgewater Triangle. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but that's had a long history going back to the Native Americans in Massachusetts that, you know, UFOs, Bigfoot, a lot of paranormal, strange stuff. And I had a good sighting there that I investigated the case for the BFRO, and this was a good daylight sighting, crossing the road in front of a guy that really, he said it couldn't have been anything else, you know. The reports on the BFRO database, and that was another good sighting. So I probably three or four really good Class A sightings where the witness will actually take you out to the spot and, you know, we'll recreate it. We had I had a friend with me who we both, same thing. He ran across the road and he was like, nah, he's not even close. Same thing. So it's, there are daylight sightings, nighttime sightings. The daylight ones are really interesting because it's less of a chance to misidentify it when it's broad daylight. And, you know, most people know a bear from different animals. And when they say this wasn't a bear, it's pretty interesting, especially if they're hunters or just good observers. When you can rule that out, especially running across the road, if it's a guy in a suit, this thing almost got hit by a car because it actually got brushed. He slowed down. He was approaching it in the right lane, and there was a car coming the other way. It was actually an SUV, and the creature was looking at him crossing the road. So when its eyes were on him, it didn't even really pay attention to the car coming the other way, and it actually brushed it. And its arms went up in the air, and the car went by. And so the witness told me that they had to have seen it. They almost hit it. But they never came forward. There's maybe two or three more people that could corroborate it. Or possibly they could have clipped it, and there's the mystery solved right there. But just joking aside, I wouldn't, you know. That was a pretty good case because this guy was reliving it when we were there, just on the spot. He was, you could just see it in his face. He was like, oh, I can't believe it, you know?
Yeah.
He said he was joking around. And he's been laughed at. He said, I don't care what people think now. I know what I saw. Mm-hmm. And he had a very, very good job in the town where he was very well known. And like a lot of people that do see it, they just don't want their reputation on it. They don't want their name on it. They want to remain anonymous. It's kind of like job security. A lot of people say that, especially the higher or more important your job is, you don't want to be known as the person seeing big hairy creatures running across the road or in your yard. I think the ridicule factor, and I think most of that stuff, it actually, that's why a lot of people don't want to get involved and don't. Because I know people, I've talked to people that have seen it, and they know other people that have seen it that won't talk about it.
Mm-hmm. And they don't want to report it because, like you said, they don't want to be laughed at. They don't want to have other people make fun of them or, you know, tease the kids, you know? So,
yep.
You're either going to have to be open or you're going to have to be closeted. But either way, have your own opinions. Never let anyone convince you. Always find the truth for yourself and make your own decisions because that's what we're here for. You know what I mean? So I'm so excited that you're here and you're talking and telling us all of your great stories. Now, do you have your stories? Do you have anything out there on your website then that people can go out there and check you out? And
on BFRO or Squatchachusetts?
Squatchachusetts.
Well, we have a Facebook page. Right now our website is under construction, and that should be up and running. But if you want to read, like, really good sighting reports,
mm-hmm.
you can go on the BFRO website, just pick a state, and it's really all over the country, the phenomena. So just about every state, there's really, really good sighting reports. Cases that have been investigated, someone gone to the scene. We have investigators in every state. And so now, like, if someone calls, usually they can get someone there within a day, by the next day or two. And especially if there is evidence there, it's still fresh. You'll read, and a lot of these reports, you will read how the person's background. A lot of them are former skeptics. I never believed this till I saw it. They'll say it in the report. Mm-hmm. I'm reporting it here because my family laughs at me, or I can't tell people at work. A lot of retired police officers, a lot of ex-military, sane, credible people that know what they're talking about. A lot of forestry workers, a lot of wildlife biologists that are out there all the time. Like, you get witnesses and you can see how it's just people from all different walks of life, from people mm-hmm. that are just out for a hike, loggers, hunters, anyone that's out there enjoying the great outdoors. And Yeah, it's just fascinating that all this can happen in this day and age, and there's still no, with all the gear and tech stuff we have, there's still no answers. A lot of interesting evidence, but nothing that'll, I mean, if you want to say science, anyone else that need to prove it, need a specimen on a table, but it's just a mystery why we can't come up with one.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And, you know, it's really too bad that people are afraid to, you know, to make their sightings known, because if everyone who had a sighting would just come forward and have it logged, you know, we would have much better of an idea where these are, you know, and how often they're seen. I have a feeling that there's so many more sightings than we have any clue about.
I agree. We have the BFRO 2 years ago passed, went over the 50,000 sighting report mark, and that's just reports that have been investigated and logged. There's hundreds more. Like, we have a stockpile of incidents that have been reported over the years that just haven't been investigated yet, or it's been a few years now and the people are a little reluctant to talk about it. But there are still, and you got to sift through a lot of it. A lot of it's not true, so you got to kind of weed them out, look for the really good reports. But I agree, for every one or two people that do report it, I bet there's 10 that don't, or 15, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
We've had, we talked to a lot of people. We go to a lot of different conferences and where you'll meet witnesses. And I've heard witnesses say that, like, it's almost therapy to them to, they can go to a place where there's like-minded people, and it's almost a relief to be able to talk about it in public and not be laughed at and not be, we joke around that it's like an AA meeting, you know, I'm Joe and I saw a Bigfoot, you know?
Yeah. A BF meeting, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's true. SA, I enjoy it.
Maybe SA, Sasquatch Awareness.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Also, I've seen people like get emotional about it too.
Mm-hmm.
They're reliving it, and they're like, it's almost such a breath of fresh air to be able to let it out, and it's therapeutic.
I agree.
That's for sure. I enjoy the events, especially just being with other Bigfoot researchers, and it's. I just love being with the other people because there's so much sharing going on there and get to see what other people have found, and you don't feel like such an outcast when you talk about it. As we've spoke at some paranormal conferences and they just kind of, Bigfoot, what?
Yeah.
They're all about ghosts, but they're not so sure about the Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's not supposed to be here. Well, we've been taught our whole lives that it's all folklore and they don't exist. You're crazy if you think they do.
But isn't it funny how paranormal researchers or people who are into like ghosts can believe in ghosts but not in Bigfoot? And I'm like, well, you know, Bigfoot actually leaves footprints and breaks stuff and creates stick structures in the woods. You know, this is a lot more solid evidence than ghosts are leaving behind. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, unless you've had experiences with ghosts. You know what I mean?
Evidence, like solid evidence.
True.
You know, most of the time people want to see something that they can touch or right. Or feel, you know, but having just an experience or feeling something in your own body, that's one thing that you can have for yourself, but you can't really share that with somebody else and have them believe it at the level that you do. So, you know, but a footprint, you can all look at that footprint, you can cast it, you can hold it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's been a lot of people have seen, even some researchers I know, they've found handprints on their cars, when they go to leave, people have had them on their windows, on their houses. Like, they'll see a wet hand, a wet, oily hand.
I've heard of that.
Actually, our member has one from his house. He has a good picture I could send to you. Yeah, it's actually a handprint on the side of his house, almost like it was leaning in. There's been reports. People have seen them looking in their windows. All kinds of encounters, like up close. It, like you were saying earlier, like they're a lot braver in the night. They can walk right into your yard and look into your window in these areas and probably just where their entertainment. They're checking out what you're up to. And there's actually a good video I saw not too long ago. Someone recorded. They thought it was ghost activity, and they aimed their camera and kept it recording overnight. And it actually caught something looking right in the window. And you can see, again, this is inconclusive, but it's a big round head with big giant eyes, the eye shine. And I believe there was something found the next day in the yard, scuff marks on the ground or something was standing there. So, there was one of those in Massachusetts, I want to say 4 years ago. And nice. Central Massachusetts, woman saw one looking in the window. Again, where she lives out in the middle of nowhere, where her nearest neighbor's probably a mile away. And she has heard weird stuff at night. And that was pretty much convincing for her. She saw it pretty vividly looking right in her window. And it wasn't quite total darkness yet. And she knew what it was. And I know actually a couple of people that they shades it down all the time that live out that way. And they actually never open them. They don't want to see because they know something's out there.
Well, you're
people
making...
people reported that a lot. Sorry, I didn't mean to...
No, continue.
That have ended up seeing it before that, they've always felt like they're being watched. So in a lot of those reports you read, that's what makes them look more. They feel like they're being watched. And then over time, they look around more. See, a lot of people are just oblivious to it. They're like, oh, it's just another animal, or it's just a branch breaking, until you actually see it. So I'm told.
Now, you're getting me really excited and really wanting to go up on the East Coast again. Because I was telling you before that I used to live up there for a couple of years down in Boston, or over in Boston, Massachusetts. And that's an area that we haven't been to, Jen. Wouldn't that be neat?
You know, Jenna, you and Tammy are just something else. I just got to say, they talked to all these Bigfoot researchers on Messenger on Facebook. And then I know, without talking to your girls, I know that you're saying, well, we really want to come out there. I really want to come out there, but it's up to Jen. You're going to have to talk to Jen. I know that's what you're saying, because then they contact me and say, oh, Jenna and Tammy want to come out. So
it's all Tammy. It's not me at all. I don't know who you're talking to. Hey, you know what? I am honestly saying and I know who you're talking about, because he told me, he goes, I'm texting Tammy and Jen now. And I said, oh, good.
You know, we're actually having putting together a big event next year. Would be a good time to come out if you want to come out this way.
What is the event?
The middle Central Mass. We're going to have some really great speakers. And possibly it's we have a new casino in Springfield, Massachusetts. And so far, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, Cliff Barrickman, Bobo from Finding Bigfoot, Jonathan Wolk. It should be a great time, and we're gonna have a big event. It would be a good time to come out. We're going to, you know, in between that time, we're going to do some squatching, go out to some areas.
When is it, though? I know
There is no date set yet. I think right now we're looking at late summer or fall.
Okay, because I know we stay pretty busy. We've already we've already been booked into 2019. So we have to watch what we say yes or no to. But definitely keep us informed, because that does sound like a great, great time.
And it doesn't have to be that month. If you ever want to come out anytime, we can definitely take us out and go to some hot spots?
Jen's laughing because I'm like, oh, I want to. But the problem
they
is,
we always want to come. It's just how can we fit in the funding? That's the thing. We were doing 2 to 3 events a month this year for about 6 months straight.
Wow.
Our pocketbooks were tight. But we were speaking at events and they were covering some of the expense. So then we'd fit in squatching in that area while we were there. And, you know, so we were trying to make the most of it. But oh my gosh, we had a good time, but boy, were we tired when that was done.
Oh yeah. It was like a tour. It really was. But it was such a wonderful experience, and the people that we got to meet and the people that we got to talk to. And so, just finding out, you know, that's one thing though. We have not been to the East Coast. I'm just saying.
We were in Virginia. Ah. We were in Virginia and we were in Tennessee.
But not that far east. I'm talking east.
Okay.
Northeast. We needed to get to the Northeast.
I like that.
What she's saying is she wants to go to the different accent. The accent gets changes up north. Okay. Gotcha.
Yes.
Oh, I see. After New York, it changes over. New York, Boston. Awesome. Somewhere in Connecticut, it changes over.
Awesome.
You know what's funny is I'm in Eastern Mass, and most of the Squatchatuchus people are in Western Mass, and they don't have the thick Boston accent like I do. And it's pretty funny when we talk. You can tell we're from, like, totally different areas, and we're only, like, 1.5-2 hours apart. But I got the, they don't say the park like I do.
Awesome. Hey, we're coming to the end of the show, and I want to make sure that everybody knows where to find you online if they'd like to contact you. Could you throw out your contact information, where they can find you online, on websites or Facebook, email?
Well, sure. We do have a Facebook page, Squatchatuchus. And we do have a website, but like I was saying earlier, it's been down. It's under construction. But that would be squatchatuchus.com. Hopefully that'll be up and running soon. We have someone working on that now, actually. And, we put out reports. We're always welcoming to people, new members. We take out. There's no fees. Just sign up, and we usually post. Anyone can come out with us. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
A lot of fun. Hopefully you girls can make it out here sometime.
Well, we're gonna put it on our list of places we want to go. That's for sure. Jenna's already writing it down.
I am.
I can see her writing. So,
yeah.
But thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. And we'll hope you come back and visit with us another time at a later date. Sure. If something exciting happens, especially. But we're going to have to say goodnight for tonight and thank everybody for tuning in. So thanks to Dave McCullough for coming on the show from BFRO in Squatchatuchus. I said it. And again, we're the She Squatchers signing off. We'll see you next week, everybody. Good night.
Good night. Thank you very much.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.